Blog Talk Radio.
Last night I saw a lunar eclipse in the sky. Then something happened in my mind's eye. I saw you in a whole different light. Clearly, really, it's not that I want you to change. It's more that I want you to stay the same.
Oh, and I really do want you to stay the same. I'd like you to stay right here with me for the next hour. I'm Bonnie D. Graham, a.k.a. Radio Red, with a little bit of highlighting going on. I love it. They told me it would work, and frankly, it does. And our show is called Read My Lips. And I'm going to bring you, as I always try to do, some very, very interesting people who have experiences I could never even dream of trying. I might want to be a little bit like them, and you might want to figure out what they've done to make them happy, successful, smart, whatever they're doing. They're extraordinary people, and I'll introduce you to my guests in just a couple minutes. But those of you who listen know it's time for me to do a couple of shout-outs. I'm going to say hello to my Lorna, my Dune, my Kaylee. Ah, New Jersey was hit by a snowstorm over the weekend. No power, no well, no garage. What can I tell you? Glad you're warm and safe here with Lorna in New York. My big kahuna, ballerina, artist, and editor. Happy Halloween to my family in Florida. And happy everything to Lorna and here, and Dune and Ed in North Carolina. And Joe, good luck with your theater group. And something tells me you're playing the part of a woman tonight in the Lower East Side on Halloween. So I hope... I hope you get asked out. I really do. Latest movie we saw, let's see, we saw The Three Musketeers. Loved it. Very surprising. A movie that really makes fun of itself and enjoys the ride. And Johnny English Reborn, OMG. First I was petrified. Yes, I know. But not half bad. Rowan Atkinson really does the job, and he's kind of smart in a stupid kind of way, and it moved that movie well, and he actually got the girl, so I was very proud of him. Let's do our October 31st birthdays. These people are stuck having birthdays on Halloween. How about Vanilla Ice? Did you know his real name is Robert Van Winkle? Excuse me? Okay. Rob Schneider, the comedian. Jane Pauley, TV host. John Candy. Deirdre Hall, the actress. Soaps Unite. Deirdre Hall, we remember her. Sally Kirkland, the actress. How about Kinky Friedman? Isn't he somewhere in Texas doing political humor and singing and all that? David Ogden Steer is born today. Tom Paxton, very famous folk singer. Michael Landon, the late Michael Landon, yes. Dan Rather, born today. Dale Evans, remember? Mm-hmm. Roy and Dale. And Juliet Lowe, the founder of the Girl Scouts, was born today in 1860. And John Keats, the esteemed poet, is born today in 1795. Special RIP, as always, to Cousin Freddie, and greetings to the Seattle Moose and the Seattle Chicks. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest. Let's see. Oh, we did get our third guest on the line. This is a beautiful thing. So he's going to be listening, and we'll pick him up later. Let me tell you who I've got. I've got a couple who just said, chuck it. That's what they said, that letter, chuck it. They had the good life. They were living in the city, cabs, restaurants, metro, everything wonderful. And one day they said, something's missing. Let's go off and live in the jungle. We know nothing about the jungle, but we're a strong couple. Our marriage will survive. And they did it. And they're here to tell us their story. They've written a couple of books that aren't yet published, but we're going to talk about what's coming up. And they might change the titles a couple times during the show, but you'll understand. When you live in the jungle, you get used to being very spontaneous. Their names are Glenn Tibaldeo and Laura Berger. I'll be bringing them on in just a second. After they are on, I will bring on Daryl Knock, and we will talk about a healthy self-image for a guy who started out just really not getting it at all. Poverty, abusive father, extreme poverty. In the days when food stamps didn't yet let you go shopping in all the fancy places, you had to wait online with a box for your food. He was disfigured at an early age during an accident. And he managed to survive the taunts of the children in school. He got through it. He taught himself how to not only have self-esteem, but how to become a businessman. And he just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. This guy isn't even 55, and he's semi-retired and has owned over 650 properties. Successful business owner. I want to know what he's having for breakfast. That's Daryl, and we'll be bringing him on in a few minutes. And then, rounding out the show, we have a guy who kept falling down and kept getting up, and he's falling down and getting up. Interesting story, very, very, almost fatal, tragic accident. At about the age of 12, he'll set me right on the chronology when he comes on, and he managed to just get through a lot of booze and a lot of dope and a lot of bad bars and a lot of scenes. And guess what? Today he's a business coach, a businessman. He's even a popular yoga teacher, and he's going to give us some tricks of the trade of yoga for the small business owner who is very, 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 very stressed in our difficult economy. So let me bring, and his name is Michael B. Harris. Let me bring on my first guests, Glenn Tibaldeo and Laura Berger. Welcome back from Costa Rica, the jungle. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, Bonnie.
I'm fine. I survived my intro. That's about all the jungle I'm going to be going into tonight. I met the two of you a few weeks ago and all my guests today at the National Publicity Summit in New York. I was thrilled to meet such interesting people, and you have quite a story. So tell me, Glenn and Laura, who wants to go first? What was wrong with living in a nice city and having a good life? Boredom? Were you annoyed? Were you not feeling challenged? What happened? Who wants to tell us the story?
Well, before I start, there's a few things that probably shouldn't be confusing to a person, but this mute button confused me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Sure.
You're loud and clear.
Wonderful. So I think both of us have a little bit of a different take on this. For me, you know, as it was happening, it didn't seem like that much of a big deal to me. I mean, I knew that the people around us were apprehensive about the choice we were making. But in hindsight, you know, we went there. And it felt like it must have been something in the charts. I don't know. I'm not an astrology buff, but it just seemed like there was no turning back on the decision. There was nothing strange about it. Clearly, in hindsight, there probably was something strange about it. But it was just time.
Okay, whose idea was it first? Laura, did you who said the words "We're going to Costa Rica"? Right? Who said that first?
It was Glenn's. Glenn is more of a just spontaneous and go out and let's just do something. And I have to put logic around everything. So when we had gone visiting there on holiday, we fell in love with the country and had spiritual experiences. But then we came back and that was kind of it for me. I was like, okay, well, that was good. And he was the one that was like, oh, come on, let's go do this. So it took a lot of discussion on our part and working through it so that I was very much wanting to embrace it as well, which I eventually did.
Okay, now let's take a couple steps backward, if you don't mind. What were you doing? Where were you living? What kind of jobs did you have? And how long had you been doing the corporate thing?
We were in downtown Chicago. We were about probably, you know, 3 minutes out by cab, so really, really close to the very, very center of Chicago. You know, right by the L stop, so classic city life. I was a corporate project manager. I had my own business doing that, and I was just helping companies implement software systems, restructure, and make personnel changes. So that's what I was doing. The business actually was doing better than it ever had. So it was kind of an interesting time in life to say, I just have to do this. And so we just ejected.
And
now
for myself.
Go ahead, Laura. Yes.
I was going to say for myself, I actually was doing global software implementation and had just recently resigned to take another position, experienced some deaths in my family, and decided to take some time off. And then that was just like the cake on the icing. It was like, or the icing on the cake, and it was just like, okay, enough is enough. So,
well, given the choice, it was probably the cake on the icing.
Yeah.
So Glenn has the idea, gee, Costa Rica was a nice place to visit, but I think I'd like to live there. And Laura says, not so fast, buddy. Let me think this over. Now, what kind of discussion? I interview a lot of psychologists and self-help authors, relationship gurus, and they're always talking about communication. Communication is the core of getting anything done. You have to talk about your feelings. You have to talk about your needs. You have to be in sync. You have to be aligned. It's all wonderful on paper. I'm sorry. That's the way I feel it. It's wonderful on paper. But for a couple to make a huge life decision, and it doesn't have to be moving to the jungle. It could be buying a new house, moving to a new city, deciding to have children, deciding not to have children, deciding where to have Thanksgiving dinner, whose family to see. Could be any one of those, which are all, in one way or another, life-impacting decisions. So this is big. This is giving up everything and going off to seek something you didn't even know what. How long did it take from the time Glenn said, I think we should chuck it all and move to Costa Rica, to Laura said yes? What was that time span?
Yeah, Laura, how long was it? Probably 8-9 months?
Yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Probably
maybe a little bit less than that.
And I think it's ironic, Bonnie, that you said it looks good on paper, because that's exactly the way we made the decision, and that's what our first book is about, Boundless Connection. It's a relationship technique, we call write, read, relate. And we spent a lot of time every night, more or less, choosing a question, sometimes, most of the time, about our move, because we had a lot of different places we were thinking of going. We knew we wanted to go somewhere. And we would write on the question about those places for 10 minutes. We would exchange notebooks and read about it and then discuss it for 10 minutes. And it was a really good controlled atmosphere for a constructive conversation. And in the end, the decision to go, when Laura said, I would regret if we didn't go to Costa Rica, was actually in one of her writings. And then we just knew. At that moment, we just knew. In fact, she broke down crying as soon as I read the words. So that was that moment.
Goodness. Now, were you journaling this, Laura and Glenn? Was this in a book, a loose leaf book, or in a packet of papers that got stuck in a folder, or was it sticky notes on a grease board somewhere? How did you gather these notes and keep them straight? And how many places did you consider before you got to Costa Rica?
We were journaling in a notebook, the two of us, and we've been doing this for 11 years, all of our journaling. And the different places that we were looking at moving to Hawaii, which is actually where I grew up. We also looked at Austin, Texas, because Glenn went to graduate school there, and that we were looking for a warmer climate. And we were looking at Rome. We were thinking of moving to Italy. And then we were also looking at Costa Rica.
Okay, when you say the jungles of Costa Rica, how much jungle are we talking? Are we talking about you have to walk two blocks to the 7-Eleven, or are we talking no 7-Eleven, no walking? What are we talking about? Machete? What are we talking about?
The vegetable guy would show up in a little rinky-dinky truck once a week on Fridays. That's how remote we were talking.
Where did you live? What kind of a house? Did it have electricity, plumbing? Tell us. Give me the picture so I can close my eyes and see Glenn and Laura in Costa Rica the first week. Where were you and what were you doing?
So we were in a village called Ojochal, and it overlooks the ocean. They call this area where the mountains meet the ocean. Part of the huge draw of being there was the kind of PCH-style landscape there, but much more lush, obviously, because it's a tropical climate.
What is PCH landscape? Tell me.
The Northern California coastal-type landscape where you're driving along and you look down and there's the ocean, that type of thing. So this village, there's a valley part of the village where a lot of the Costa Ricans, they call them Ticos, live. And then in the higher elevations are where all the gringos came and kind of bought a property, because the Ticos really don't they don't value living in an elevated place. So we were up on a hill about 300 feet up. We rented a European-style home, and it looked beautiful on the outside. But everything in that area, no matter what you do, is pioneering. The joke is, if you put a bunch of people in that area up against the wall and say, who's an electrician, everybody's hand will go up. So these houses were built in a very interesting way, and things kind of went pear-shaped pretty quickly. So despite what it looked like, despite how beautiful it was, we arrived, didn't have water. Electricity went out on a regular basis. Plus, we arrived in October, which was rainy season. So that's good for 150 to 200 inches of rain in the span of about 3 or 4 months.
Hold on. How many inches of rain?
150 to 200 lots of times in that rainy season.
I'm glad Laura has long, straight, shiny hair. You weren't going to end up with anything else in that kind of a climate. Now, let's stop for a second, and I want to go back one more time, if you'll allow me, please, and find out, what did you give up? What were you living like? I know Metro Chicago, near the center of the city, cabs and restaurants, corporate America, wonderful. What did your house look like, and did you sell it and everything in it? What was the prep before you moved to this place?
Laura, this is your question to answer, Shirley.
We ended up chucking the majority of our things, and everything that we own fit in a 10x10 storage unit. And we've since chucked a lot of that. So we gave up the comfort the comfortable lifestyle that we were living. We were living in a condo. We did end up renting that out. We didn't sell it. And when you asked me that question, the first thing that came to mind for me is our friends and the community that surrounded us and our family.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I was feeling, great loss. And so
yeah.
There was this sense of loss around that. And then also identity, because my work was my identity. And then
sure.
to throw me in the middle of the jungle with just my husband, and we're both not working now, and you have no distractions, you really get to your core of who you are. So I feel like it was a lot of loss on multiple levels of peeling back the onion type of experience.
Right.
And then coming
and
out
you
of
hear
that,
what you
so much
just
better.
Said? You just said with just, and you paused, with just my husband. I heard you loud and clear. And that's the reason it's such a good, and that wasn't negative, but it was such mm-hmm. a good relationship comment. I had no distractions. And I'm hearing you say, the two of us against the world. I can't sing very well. I won't sing the song. Two of us against the world, blah, blah, blah. So there you were. Did you like each other at that point? Did one of you, when the first 100 inches of rain came down, one of you say, crap, look what you made me do? Or, shoot, I missed my fireplace and my. Did you have a laptop with you? Did you have any connectivity? Give us the trappings here. What did we know what we left behind? What actually could you do there? Could you drive?
Yeah.
Could you watch TV? What was it like?
So, yeah, boy, there's a really long answer to your question, so I'll try and keep it brief. But a few of the points that you touched on. The TV thing, the ironic was that, and no knock on anyone ethnically at all, but it just was kind of ironic. The only American company we purchased service from was Dish Network, and that was the only thing that got hooked up within 24, 48 hours. The other stuff we waited for like 3 months, and sometimes, actually, a lot of it we didn't get at all, like a phone. But we did get to watch TV, and we had a tin roof because you're in an earthquake zone. They don't want to put mm-hmm. up cement roofs or shingles because that's dangerous. So you had this rain pelting this tin roof. We couldn't hear each other. We couldn't hear the TV after about 6 p.m. and the lights would go out. So what would you do? You'd kind of go to bed at 8 o'clock. Either that or lots of times, you know, we started tearing each other apart, frankly. The
Did
cars
you really?
Didn't work. We were stuck up there. You know, we had two really, really old cars, which were kind of my ruin. But we were in paradise. I mean, we woke up every morning and it was just amazing. The toucans and the monkeys howling in the trees. And I mean, you name it, you're overlooking the ocean. And then by evening time, the rain comes and it's a completely different story. So
now, I hope you had cameras with you. Did you have film? Did you bring digital cameras? Did you have enough electricity to charge your camera if you had a digital?
Yeah. Yeah,
we did, yeah, and we took video while we were there, and we did take a lot of photos. And I also wanted to mention to you, Bonnie, that we had what we called the intermittent cafes. There was this internet cafe that everybody
sure.
would, you know, head down to on all of these dirt roads, and if you
sure.
made it there,
mm-hmm.
it was really not even 50-50. It was
mm-hmm.
probably 80% no internet and 20% that you would have internet, and it was
really?
Obviously... Yeah, it was like a dial-up in terms of
that would scare me. Now, how long did you plan to stay? Did you have an agreement, or was it open-ended, and how long did you stay?
We agreed to try this out for a year because we had actually made an investment in some property, and we wanted to see if, on, you know, someday, maybe today, who knows, if we could establish a, you know, a livelihood there, we might want to build on that property. But first, we wanted to see what it was like to live there. So we signed a year lease. And we went to this European rental home. But then, unfortunately, Laura got sick, so we came home to take a break. And in the midst of that...
After 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of that, we kind of looked at what was going on down there, because this was a place where land values had doubled every year for 10 to 15 years, and there were a lot of speculators there. And
sure.
the bubble came out of the real estate market, and people started heading home. And given how remote we were already, we kind of thought, well, I don't know if we want to go back. And we ended up staying home. But repicking up all of our jobs the way they – at least mine, the way it was, and our professions, and doing the same thing I was before. Laura's an executive coach and a thriving leadership consultant. So
how much
this is a message to everybody
that
you can do that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You can. How much do you miss your Costa Rica days, and would you do it again?
Absolutely, and I would do it again. I would do things slightly different than in terms of my mindset. in creating that shift and shifting that lens and how to look at things. And we go back every year, and we have friends there, and we'll stay with them. But it's definitely a no-regret experience. And just who we are as a couple and how we've grown and what we've endured and what we've learned about each other over and over and over again, you can't replace that.
And I saw something in your promo sheet about a breakfast cereal that can save relationships. Why don't we just cover that, and then we're going to bring Daryl on because it's 20 after. But tell me the story of the breakfast cereal.
Sure. So that hinges upon our Right-Re-Relate method, which really honestly is not a new method, but it's just such a simple relationship communication method, the writing and the exchanging of notebooks that we talked about. And you base that technique on questions that you ask mm-hmm. and write about. So you want to make the questions creative and keep them fun. So a question that we came up with was, if our relationship was a breakfast cereal, you know, which one would it be? And the answer on my end was muesli, because we tend to try and keep healthy. We like to travel, and, you know, it's European, which I'm a European citizen. And Laura,
right.
What was yours?
My answer was Captain Crunch, because our relationship is sweet and delicious, but it sometimes cuts the roof of your mouth.
Ooh, those are telling words. That's very interesting. And quickly, what about the tire that goes down 100-foot embankment? How do you get it back?
Oh, that's not quite a quick story. How much time do you have, seriously?
You've got 60 seconds because Daryl
okay.
is waiting. So before
All right, let's
on
try
Daryl,
it.
What happened to the tire? Go ahead.
Let's try it. We were at lunch with some friends at their house, and this guy goes into the shed to look for some stuff, and he lives on a house atop an incline 100 yards. So he rolls a tire out into his driveway, and he thinks it's going to stop and flop. Well, it doesn't. It goes straight down the hill, breaks down a fence, and ends up in primary rainforest, probably never to be found again. So he's extremely upset. It's an off-road tire. It's brand new, $250 tire, and he's obsessed. We're trying to eat lunch, and he can't get off the subject of this tire. So somebody who was sitting at the table said, you know, I used to be a jeweler, and when people lost, she was laughing about this, actually, she wasn't serious. When people lost precious gems, we'd take one of identical weight but less value, and we'd drop it in the same place. So why don't you just drop another tire down the hill? And he, you know, everybody laughed. Well, him being who he is, he got up, told his wife to go in the shed that he was going to go down the hill. And it started raining, like we told you it does. It started raining like crazy. And she thought she heard him say, go, and she rolled the tire out of the hill. It almost killed him on the way down.
Oh, my God.
It broke through the fence again. Of course, he wasn't ready for it. So now he has two tires in the jungle. So he and I run down there, and we couldn't find them. But then after about 10 minutes, lo and behold, he finds one, looks over about 10, 15 feet away, there's the other one.
And there it was. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Good story. Well, the website we'd like people to go to keep track of your story and keep track of when your books come out, and I know the first one is due out in February, we're going to send people to, what is it, Read?
Right, readrelate.com.
Right, readrelate. So it's W-R-I-T-E. Let's do it. Just spell the whole thing out. W-R-I-T-E-R-E-A-D. RELATE.com. Did I get it in the right order?
Absolutely. And if you go out there and you sign up, we'll send you a free quick reference guide and starter questions, 10 starter questions to get started with this technique that completely transformed our lives. And you'll end up on our mailing list for our book promos. And
do it.
Yep.
Now, I want Glenn Tibaldeo and Laura Berger to help me welcome Daryl Knock, and I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. And, Daryl, I've got you coming on right now. Hi, Daryl. How are you? This is Bonnie. Welcome.
I am awesome. How are you
Hello.
Doing?
Hey, Daryl.
How are you,
Daryl?
Hey.
This is Old Friends Week here. You were all on my line at the same time at the National Publicity Summit a couple of weeks ago. It was October. God, it was half a month ago. I can't believe it. By the way, happy Halloween to everyone. I hope it is full of treats and no tricks where you're living, and I hope everybody's safe. So, Daryl, I know you've been on the line listening. You heard their story. You probably remember some of it when you met them in person in New York. Any comments? I know you're into self-esteem and confidence and doing what you need to do and breaking free of patterns and expectations and realizing all kinds of wonderful things. So any comments you have about what we just heard?
Well, it does take a lot of guts to make that decision, and that, you know, certainly is self-confidence and what they were about to take on. So I'm not sure that I would have the guts to go out to Costa Rica and go to the jungle, but, you know, everybody has their thing.
That's true. Well, you've certainly done your share. I'm pulling up your ebook now, and your ebook is Mastering a Healthy Self-Image, The Guidebook to Real Happiness and Enormous Success. Daryl, pronounce your last name for me. Did I get it right?
No, but close.
Well,
it's actually pronounced Noke, as
Noke.
If you spelled
okay.
it N-O-K-E, Coke with an N.
I will put that down in my notes. I apologize. I always like to ask and be corrected if I deserve it. Now, I'm going to ask Laura and Glenn to stay on with us and listen, and we'll be talking to them at some point during your interview, Daryl Noke. And I want to make sure that I'm sure they'll have some things to say. So, Daryl, low self-esteem, miserable childhood, one of seven children, brutally abusive father, mother with very little education, trying to keep you all together. Accident disfigures you. You end up being the laughingstock of your class. Your nose is kind of flattened out. And you've got absolutely nothing going for you, kid. So how did you get to be a business success, a confident man who's teaching other people how to have a healthy self-image? You want to give us the overview of how you went from A to that long stretch to Z?
I sure would. The first thing is my mother was a very disciplined person, and so she gave me that foundation stone. And the second thing was, is she told me all my life, even though I had the issues that I had, you can do anything you want to do if you're willing to work hard enough to get it. And she told me I was special and that I could, you know, that uniqueness of my disfigured face was I was special and that I was going to do something great when I grew up.
Well, that certainly is an empowering statement instead of, hey, you rotten kid, you're just going to never have anything. So she believed in you. There was your first clue, that your mom believed in you. As little as she had to give you, she believed in you. And wouldn't you say that was the greatest gift of all?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, like you said earlier, I did get a lot of ribbing when I was in school. But I believe that gave me even more determination, you know, so to speak, to say, I am going to be something in life and I'm going to show those people. Maybe that gave me that little bit of determination to do that.
I think it gave you a lot. I want to tell you a little side story here. I was recently at a friend's house watching their fish tank, which is a great big, I don't know, 50-gallon something, right in front of the breakfast counter. And we're having breakfast, and I'm watching a little red and black fish come nosediving down, and right in front of him or her was one of those sucker fishes that leeches onto the glass. I'm sure you've all seen them. They're not very pretty fish. And this leech fish is just sucking the algae off the glass. Well, this little red tiny thing starts knocking at the sucker fish because the sucker fish is adhered to the glass by his mouth suction, he is going over in 5-degree increments, going from a vertical position to down, 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 down. So the little red fish is knocking this fish that's 3 times its size, and I'm thinking, this is a damn bully. And the fish is ending up horizontal, the sucker fish, but he has never let go of the glass. And as soon as the red fish goes away, the other fish goes, ba-bing, ba-bing, and writes himself right back up to his original position. Well, the little red fish didn't like it at all. So he comes back and he goes, knock, 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 knock. And the sucker fish goes, bum, 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 bum. Anyway, I took a video of this 2 weeks ago, and I posted it on YouTube. Nobody knows about it. It's called Bully Fish Story. So if you want to go to YouTube, I put it out under my Twitter name of Radio Red 777. It's even got the Sunday morning show's audio underneath it. I didn't even clean it up. But it's so adorable. So as I'm listening to you, Daryl, I'm thinking of you're the sucker fish that's saying, I'm going to hang on for dear life, and you can knock me over as many times as you want, and I'm just going to keep getting back up. Is that you, Daryl Noke?
You can count on it.
I'm listening to you reading your book.
I had the good fortune of when I was 24 years old, I started my first company. It was a manufacturing company. I happened to design some products that went along with the wood stove industry. I sort of got lucky at the right time, you know, right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember putting an SBA loan package together. You know, I'm 24.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a manufacturing company together that I've never done before in my life.
Amazing.
I went to the Small Business Development Center, and the gentleman said to me, they're never going to give you this loan. You're 24 years old. You've never had any manufacturing experience. You've never had any distribution experience. They're never going to give you that loan. And I looked him in the eye, and I said, Pete, I'm going to get that loan, and you can either get on board and help me get that loan, or you get out of my way because I will run you over.
Wow.
24 years old.
Wow. At 24 years old, coming from your background, your disadvantaged, disenfranchised, oh, my God, who am I and what am I going to do with my life? That takes a lot of guts. Now, your older brother played a part in helping you read a lot, in helping you learn about self-esteem. You want to give us a little background on your brother?
Absolutely. I'm the youngest of seven, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
He is approximately 21 years older than I am.
Okay.
So at the age of 21... he turned my life around by giving me a set of Zig Ziglar tapes. And I remember listening to those Zig Ziglar tapes and thinking to myself, I can remember back of how negative I remember myself being.
Mm-hmm.
And within the first 10 minutes of reading that book or listening to the tapes, I thought, I'm never going to listen to this thing all the way through. And Zig Ziglar said, you need to listen to this 16 times in order to get
wow.
the value out of it. And I said, well, I'm never going to listen to it 16 times. But by the time I was done with the first hour of tape, I knew
mm-hmm.
that I would, and I knew it was going to change my life. And so I immersed myself in feeding my mind good, healthy, solid information.
Now, Daryl, I'm going to quote your book, page 2. You said something I found very profound and very iconic of the message you're bearing and you're carrying to people. You say, for most of us, the job of covering up all the garbage that has been dumped into our minds and bodies takes a reasonable amount of time. It all starts with the choice we make every day. Will we continue down the negative path we know, or will we feed our mind with positive education, change our mindset, and start down a new road? If you choose a positive path, you will have a more dynamic outlook on your life from that day forward. So this sounds to me like this is your encapsulation of everything you've learned. Would you say this is the iconic statement that you want people to take away from everything you're working on, Daryl?
Absolutely. You know, it isn't an overnight process to change your mindset. But once you've made that decision, I am going to be a different person starting right here, right now, then I believe you have a totally different outlook going forward.
Now, let's talk about the meaning of self-esteem. Does it mean I wake up in the morning, I look in the mirror, and I say, hey, you're not so damn bad-looking, kid, and you have a decent brain, you're living in a nice place, you got good learning and skills and tools, you have a good job, so go do something wonderful today. Is that self-esteem, or is self-esteem saying when somebody says to me, hey, move over, I was online first, you don't curse at them, you say, yes, you're right, I'm going to move over because I don't want you to beat the crap out of me. What is self-esteem? How do you define it?
I believe it's your first analogy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly the other is some common courtesy from time to time. Sometimes you have to just let somebody have their way so that you don't make an issue. But I believe it's your first analogy in that, you know, you believe in yourself to the point that you will take action and you will go out and you'll do what you need to do, which is always more difficult than what we think, but yet
sure.
we persevere and we do it.
Now, you studied real estate down the line, and you ended up with the man who taught you. And by the way, in your book, you mentioned that each step of building your businesses, you brought on board people who were experts, and they trained you for days or weeks or years at a time. So you recognized the value of hooking up with and making positive relationships with people who had the knowledge you needed and were willing to partner with you. That's That's something I think a lot of people don't get that part. What I was going to ask you was, would you say that what Glenn and Laura went through together, learning how to survive in Costa Rica, even for the 7 months, and just reacclimating, was that a couple's self-esteem? Yes, we can do it. Yes, we can stick together. Yes. Do you see any segue there from what you're teaching people to what they did?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that they did was they spent a lot of time educating themselves. They both talked about that they would read this journal, they'd read that journal, you know, as far as information. They'd search Google to find out information on this. You know, I am a huge proponent of educating the daylights out of yourself. You know, Brian Tracy, which is a speaker that I've listened to for years, says, if you read for 1 hour a day for 1 year, you'll have enough information on that subject to become an expert. And if you read for 1 hour a day for 5 years, you'll have enough information to be considered an international expert. There is Google and the Internet will allow you to educate yourself to become an expert in anything you choose, but that is the key. They chose to go to Costa Rica, and they chose to educate themselves so that they, you know, nothing, when you jump in, nothing's ever quite what you assume. But
exactly.
They at least were pretty well prepared for what they took on.
Exactly. And now I want to backtrack. I mentioned your real estate career. You knew nothing about it. You're in, I know you're 54 or around there now, and you certainly, if you're still investing in real estate, it has not been a great market for the past, what, 5, 6, 8 years now. And how did you tell yourself that you wanted to get into the process of buying properties and developing them or rehabbing them or rebuilding them and turning them around and profiting, and you set a goal by a certain date in July in a certain year. You wanted X number of properties. You missed it by 13 days, which you made note of in your book. How did you get into the idea that real estate was going to be it for you, that was going to be your main income stream, or is it your main income stream?
Well, I've had the good fortune of taking 5 companies, national and international, in 35 years. And so the real estate business was my income stream for that period of time. But I've had the good fortune of having 5 pretty healthy occupations, so to speak. I've owned 5 different companies, and I ended up selling each of those companies. And it happened to be that I sold them at the right place at the right time. You know,
there you go.
Sometimes you're just lucky in life, and you know, luck sometimes plays a part in it. It's not just all, you know, that you've worked so hard. Sometimes you're just lucky.
Do you still believe that real estate is a good investment today, Daryl? Because I know things really haven't improved yet. We're still suffering here in the Northeast with very depressed prices and dropping value. Any advice, just quickly?
Sure. In my opinion, we're starting to see the economy sag just a little bit again. Now, the Northeast, where you're at, you know, I've read that the Northeast is starting to pick up, and the prices in a number of major cities are actually starting to pick up. But small, you know, it depends on where you're at. If you're in some of the major cities in the Northeast, you're probably okay, but it's not going to grow significantly. So my personal opinion is it's not a good time to buy and hold. If you're going to fix something up and you're going to sell it quickly, then that, and you have, if you get a good enough education, then that's a good business model. But buying and holding right now, unless you have significant amount of cash, in my opinion, is not the thing to do.
Interesting.
Wait,
and Glenn and Laura, you did buy land in Costa Rica, right? And how are you doing with that?
We did. It's on the coast. It's remote, and it was incredibly speculative. So when something goes up, for 12 years, it goes down. But luckily, we had done it early enough before the bubble burst that we're treading a little south of even, but not too bad. Not bad at all.
Now,
speaking of
wealth, I want to ask Daryl, tell us a little bit briefly before we bring Michael B. Harris on. Tell me about your TrueWealthUniversity.com. What is that? Is that one of your businesses that you held on to?
It is. I originally used to teach seminars on buying, fixing up, and selling real estate, mm-hmm. how to turn properties and add value to them so that you can make money. And True Wealth University was that avenue. But mm-hmm. it went three years ago, I had a few people die on me suddenly that I wasn't quite ready for. And
ooh,
so that
sorry.
Kind of took me by surprise. And so I sold most of my real estate holdings, and I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee, so I had a little bit different story than the rest of the world. And,
right.
This is not exactly correct, but close. The day that they said the world is going down the tubes,
yeah.
Volkswagen, now we're in a town of 177,000. The day
yeah.
they decided that the rest of the world was going down the tubes, Volkswagen decided that they would put a large manufacturing facility in Chattanooga.
Oh,
and
dear.
Then
wow.
Just a few months after they decided to put a large manufacturing facility, Amazon.com decided to put 2 1-million-square-foot distribution centers. One was right across the street from the Volkswagen plant, and the other one was 25 miles up the road.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
We got thrown a life raft that was
yep.
very different than the rest of the country at the time.
And I can hear you all singing Chattanooga Choo Choo, why don't you choo choo me home? Because you were home, right?
I was very lucky. It's a,
Forgive me for that.
Yeah. It's hard to know that you're going to have that stroke of luck. But fortunately, I've had a magical life, and I've had lots of strokes of luck in my lifetime. So.
Well, you have, and I want people to go to True Wealth University. I'm going to spell that, and then we're going to bring Michael on, who's waiting patiently on hold. TrueWealthUniversity.com. TrueWealthUniversity.com. And I always say thank goodness for long URL. So, Daryl Noack, pleasure talking to you, and I'm going to ask you to stay on the line with Glenn Timoteo and Laura.
Bonnie.
Yes, yes, dear.
I have a gift for your listeners if you'd
okay.
like me to share it with.
Sure, go ahead.
I have a coin that is, I don't know if you remember that gratitude coin.
I do. I'm looking at it on your website. Click here to receive a free gratitude coin, and you will send that
if
to people?
If any of your listeners go to my website and click on that free gratitude coin and put their name and address in there, I'll send them a free gratitude coin.
Thank you very much, and we're grateful to you for that. And I'm going to say we're grateful to Michael B. Harris for staying on the line and joining us. Hello, Michael. Welcome to Read My Lips. How are you today?
I am really amazing today, Bonnie. It's been such a great conversation to have to be listening to Daryl and Glenn and Laura and you talking about such an incredible subject, really about being successful.
That's right. So let's talk about you, Michael B. Harris, and I've got your book in front of me here. It's Falling Down, Getting Up. I know that's really what you did, but you were down for a very, very long time. And your website is easy to remember because it's your name, michaelbharris.com. So tell me a little bit about that accident when you were 12 that changed your life and about your falling down for the next couple of decades. Why don't you start us off, Michael?
Well, one of the things that I have found out is we all go through a period of falling down and getting up. We've all done that. And my book is really my experience of having done that. You asked about the accident at 12 years old. When I was 12 years old, I was water skiing. And, I was a little hotshot kid trying to do a beach landing and hit the beach a little bit too hard and a little bit too fast. Ended up in the hospital actually 2 days later. I didn't go immediately because the closest doctor said that I was okay and then went to a hospital, like I said, 2 days later, and they discovered that I had some massive internal injuries, and they ended up removing 60% of my liver, my gallbladder. Mm. I had cracked ribs, collapsed lung. I went into coma for 10 days.
Mm.
And you write in your book that you also had a near-death experience. You actually saw people, you saw angels or spirits coming and reaching out for you, and then they sent you back.
Well, I did, and right. I was in a coma for about 10 days, and at the end of the coma, I went out of my body, and there was a garden area and some trees, and there was five or six spirits that, what I call spirit people, and they were in robes. And
mm-hmm.
I really liked being there. My body didn't experience any pain.
Yeah.
I felt really at peace. But they said that I wasn't done yet, and I had to go back.
Oh.
And I didn't want to go back. I was, like, reaching out to them as I was going back because I wanted to stay there. But once I got back into my body, I woke up pretty quickly. I mean, within a matter of probably an hour. And the first thing that I said that the nurses told me that I said that I wanted was my bike. I mean, you know, after all, I was 12 years old. I
mm-hmm.
wanted my bike. Apparently, I had places to go and things to do because I wasn't done yet. So I wanted to go be a kid, you know, do what
yep.
I wanted to do.
Well, you're being a kid. Your version of being a kid was starting to drink, starting to do pot. You ended up becoming an alcoholic at the ripe old age of about 14 and fought your alcoholism for many, many years. You ended up with pervasive vascular disease in your legs, many surgeries. The book is really, I think there's an awful lot of falling down, and it's not till we get close to the end that we actually see you getting up, because you just kept falling down and down and down, if you don't mind my saying so. But you were there, and you know. Do you think that all of this, trying to drink it all away, if I may be so bold as to say that, Michael B. Harris, do you think that's because of what happened to you at 12, the accident and the near death and the pain and the terrible experience of being hospitalized and months of recovery, not being able to be a normal kid? Do you think that's what led you to alcoholism and drugs so early?
Well, I mean, it could have been inherent regardless of that. I do know that I did become angry and resentful that I came back because I wanted to stay. I mean, I really wanted to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And I started drinking, and I was that kid in school that looked sick, you know, in seventh grade. I was that kid.
Yeah.
Today I don't look like that anymore. But I wanted to be accepted by other people. And, you know, I struggled, you know, with my self-esteem. I didn't want anybody to see the scars on my body or any of that. But I found that the group of people that would readily accept me regardless were the kids that drank and smoked pot. So that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And, you know, there's such a straight parallel between you and Daryl Noak. Daryl, with his accident and his nose that he thought looked so terrible, the kids were always giving him a hard time about. And here you were, you had some hidden scars, but you certainly were in a similar position of, hey, I'm not normal. I can't do what everybody does. I can't just run out and play sports because of all my injuries. So another situation of low self-esteem. And I'm thinking, Laura and Glenn, you two had very high self-esteem because you said, we can be anybody we want. We can go anywhere we want. We could say, chuck it, sell everything, and just run off to this cliff somewhere in Costa Rica with 200 inches of rain a year, and we have the wherewithal to do it. So very interesting contrast in my guest tonight. Michael, I want to continue with your story. How long did it take you to, I know your liver regenerated. It grew back, what, about 90% on its own?
Well, they did a liver scan a year after the surgery, and it showed that it had grown back all the way. So in some instances, the liver will grow back when it's damaged like that. Cirrhosis or cancer, it doesn't grow back. But when it was ruptured like mine was, it does grow back. So in many ways, I was lucky that the right organ got affected.
Yeah,
you know?
that's another point of luck. So when did you decide you'd had enough with the booze? I know you went through a 12-step program, and you tried to recover, and then things would go south, and you rode around the country in your special van. You had a good job, and you just kept falling back off. When did you finally get yourself together to the point where you feel healed and recovered and healthy? Tell us when that happened.
Well, I'll go back just a couple of years prior to that. At 27 years old, I also had a bypass surgery, vascular disease. They were going to cut off my right foot and my left leg. Both my legs were totally, almost totally blocked with atherized plaque from vascular disease. And I was on a cane, so I faced the hospital again and a couple more surgeries and blood clots and all of that. And it was really that began to change me around. And there was really one time after that I drank again, and ever since 30 years old, you know, I'm 52 now, I haven't had a drink since 30 years old. And as soon as I made that decision, my life started to change. Once I got all that junk out of my life, I was then mm-hmm. able to step forward. I was then able to get back up again and begin to recover and have a life the last 22 years that to me is totally remarkable.
It is totally remarkable. And would you say that the self-esteem thing dawned on you, like Daryl talked about, where one day you just said, I am a good person, I can live a whole life, I don't need to rely on the kids who will accept me because they're all so stoned and drunk that they're ignoring their own pain and I can ignore mine. When did you say, I'm going to get my you-know-what together and I'm going to be proud of who I am? Was there one day when that happened?
I don't know if I can say it's one day. I would say it's a process. Certainly when I was ready to quit all the drinking and the smoking pot, that day certainly changed my life dramatically. You know, along the way, as I kept getting healthier and healthier and healthier, there are certainly a lot of moments along the way where I said, I can now do anything. There's nothing holding me back. You know, mm-hmm. maybe that garden that I went to in the coma is really right here in front of me. I don't have Ooh. To leave my body to experience, you know, that peace and that love and that happiness that was there. So, I mean, today, that's where I like to live. I mean, I'm excited to live. I'm excited to get up every day. And, you know, I have a great business and, you know, things have changed dramatically. I mean, people that have read that book go, I can't even believe those things. You're such a different person.
Yes, you are. And I like what you said about the garden right there in front of you, a recognition that it was really all coming from you the whole time. It wasn't somewhere else. You were part of it. It was part of who you could be. Now, I promised my listeners you would talk to us a little bit about yoga for small business owners because you know, and Daryl knows, that starting a small business and hoping it will, first of all, just survive, and second of all, thrive, and third of all, grow into a big business, that's very, very stressful. And Laura and Glenn knew that, too, that being in corporate America is very stressful. So do you have any yoga tips for people who are stressed, regardless of the size of their business, Michael?
Just go do yoga.
give us a little instruction. Come on, I want some how-to.
Let me give an example.
Sure.
I have a number of business owners, small business owners here in Bend where I live, that insist on coming in to do their yoga practice 5, 6, 7 times a week, sometimes okay. before they go in, sometimes they go after. And this is what I'm told by them, and this is my experience too. What they get out of their yoga practice is that calmness, the clearness of the mind, the motivation. I asked somebody 2 days ago why they were doing it, a small business owner. He said, I didn't want to go into work. He says, I started coming in here to do this practice. Now I'm motivated to go into work again. You know, he owns a small pizza parlor, and he says, now I'm there 4 or 5 days a week. I was so depressed I couldn't do it. You know, the other thing, too, especially in today's world with economy, you know, and everybody, so many people struggling and everything, it gives people an edge. They feel better. Again, their energy's better. They look better. They're more excited to live. So, I mean, just those simple things right there, you know, can make the difference between being employed, not being employed, having a successful business or not having a successful business.
Can I do it alone? Can I do it at home? Can I get a tape on yoga? Can I read a book? Can I get instruction on the internet? How would I do, and how many minutes a day or a week would I have to do it to achieve what you just described, Michael?
Wow, that's such an open-ended question, Bonnie. It could be 1 hour a week, but it could be every day. It depends on the person.
How long every day would I have to do it? 10 minutes a day,
well,
half hour a day?
I practice 90 minutes every day.
Okay.
So that's what I do. Some people can do it at home. It's a little bit more challenging to have a self-practice at home. Most people need to find a place to go and, you know, to do it with other people and their fellow friends to really get motivated and be within that community.
Okay. I want to ask Daryl, Glenn, and Laura, anybody on that side of the show do yoga? Have you practiced it? Do you know it? Has it done anything for you?
This is Glenn. I had done Bikram for a while, and I really applaud the regular practice of Bikram, because I mean it just loosens you up so much body-wise and mentally. The reason why I couldn't do it all the time was because of the weather in Chicago. So I would fall off because it was so cold outside. There's something about going out in the middle of the street in 0-degree weather when you're kind of sweaty that doesn't quite cut it.
Yeah,
but
that's the chapter title in Michael's book on the Bikram yoga is hot and sweaty, interestingly enough. Laura, have you tried yoga at all?
Yeah, Glenn and I actually both did yoga together for about a year and a half, very consistently. And I've now moved more towards Pilates, like floor Pilates. Mm-hmm. But yoga, I can't speak more highly of it. It really does center you. And Michael, I wish that I had done yoga when we were in Costa Rica. I brought all of my equipment, you know, my mat and everything. And
you
I couldn't.
Girlfriend. Now I have to ask Daryl Noak. Daryl, have you ever done yoga? Think about it.
You know, I have done versions of yoga. You know, I do a lot of stretching. I like to keep my body in good health, and I also like to keep my mind in good health. And I think yoga certainly is keeping your mind in good health also. And so I kind of have a practice of a few times a week of going into a dark room and doing some really deep thinking. And, you know, I have a list of things that I want to think about, and I read those before I go into that dark room. And so it's not yoga, but it certainly is taking time to feed your mind, so to speak, and let you be creative.
You know, if I get a free week here in the schedule, maybe, I don't know, February, March, maybe we'll have everybody I've met on the show in the past year or two call in with their best relaxation methods. I think that would be an interesting. I can take up to 50 callers on one show if I can keep the area code straight. That would be fun. And would you all call back for that show?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's a great idea.
Good. And now what we have to do is we've got about 3.5 minutes, exactly 3 minutes and 8 seconds right this second, to do a wrap-up. So, Laura and Glenn, quickly give me 30 seconds. What's next for you? Which book is coming out first, and what do you think the title's going to be?
Sure. The first book is Boundless Connection, which covers our communication technique that got us through so many amazingly challenging things and got us to Costa Rica. The second one is called The Flawed Check Redemption, which is kind of a satirical story about our experience there, and also includes our genuine writings from that communication technique. And finally, Laura is going to be speaking next week at the Total Working Women's Convention in South Florida, having a leadership discussion about women.
Very nice. Yep. Very nice. And Daryl Noak, what's next for you? I'll give you 30 seconds.
I am going to be chasing all over the country doing book signings and talks about how to build your health esteem. You know, I like myself. I love my life. I'm excited. And I add brightness to everyone's life that I meet.
I think you do. And by the way, when I met you at the Publicity Summit, I looked at you. I looked at your very handsome face, and I said, What's the problem with the nose? I didn't see it. Sorry, kid. I think you're pretty damn good looking. So thank you for that. And now let's move to Michael B. Harris. What's next for you?
My book is, I actually just signed a publishing deal last week with Morgan James, and we're going to have a printed book ready in about 10 weeks. Currently, right now, somebody can go to my website. We've made special arrangements for somebody to buy an e-book through the website. So they're free to do that now. You can go to Falling Down, Getting Up, or michaelbharris.com. Either one will take you to the same place. I'm also on the website asking for other people's stories. I'm starting to collect other people's stories for the second book. There's a couple of other books in the works, but I'd love to be able to collect other people's stories of their success and however they accomplished it, their falling down, and how they got back up. So, you know, even Daryl and Glenn and Laura, I'd love to have your stories, too.
Very cool. I love for my guests to be friends with each other, and you already were. I'm going to start putting the outro music on. Now, you all know the drill. We're going to do a big, deep breath, whether you're coming from a yoga place or not, and we're going to do a moi kiss that's going to spread light and love and self-esteem and pride and joy and happiness right here on this earth to everybody we know and everybody who's listening. And even if they're not listening, we're going to spread it on them anyway. So everybody take a deep breath and see if you can outlast me.
Oh.
outstanding. I want to thank Glenn Tupaldeo and Laura Berger. I want to thank Daryl Noak. I want to thank Michael B. Harris. You've all been wonderful guests. Thank you for sharing your stories with me and my listeners. Thank you for sharing your energy and your heart. It's been a real privilege and a pleasure, and I want to do a quick last shout-out to Lorna and Kaylee. Stay warm, you two little chickadees, and happy Halloween to everyone. May it be filled with treats and not the wrong kind of tricks. I'm Bonnie D. Graham. We'll see you next week right here, the first Monday in November, on Read My Lips.